Monocle on Culture is brought to you in partnership with the Japan Cultural Expo, bringing the best of Japanese arts and culture to the world. The expo showcases 10,000 years of visual and performing arts, including media, music, literature, food, design, and fashion. It's a unique opportunity to experience Japanese culture, from prehistoric pottery and Buddhist statuary to anime, manga, and more. All these forms share the same deep reverence for nature which permeates Japanese culture. From April the 14th, you might like to explore kimono, fashioning identities at Tokyo National Museum, an exhibition that traces the kimono from its origins over 800 years ago to its symbolic and iconic role today. Discover the cultural treasures of Japan with the Japan Cultural Expo and Monocle on Culture here on Monocle 24.
This week on Monocle on Culture, we're heading into the woods at a brand new exhibition at the Hayward Gallery on London's South Bank. It's called Among the Trees and examines how artists have thought about and represented trees over the past 50 years. It could have spanned art over centuries, but the focus of this show is particularly pertinent to 2020. The tree has often been a symbol of life and peace, but in the past year, it seems to have become a totem of destruction as we've been presented with images of forests on fire from the Amazon to Australia. Among the Trees is curated by the Hayward's director, Ralph Rogoff, who at the preview last week said it's all about the culture of trees entwined with human culture. It features artists from around the world, including Roxy Payne, Ito Barada, and Steve McQueen, who all have very different takes on what trees mean to them. On entering, it's a peaceful show, as you might expect from something of such a pastoral topic. But as you get into it, there's plenty to talk about and take away about how we've interacted and intervened with nature. I'm Robert Bound, and joining me in the forest today are the writer and curator Francesca Gavin and head of content for the Listen Gallery, Ossian Ward. Welcome both.
Hey.
We're treading lightly today. We've got moss and sticks under our feet. I wonder if our listeners will be able to hear us crackling through the woods.
Bathing in the forest.
bathing in a glade.
Rustling. More of a rustler.
Yeah. So I mentioned pastoral in the introduction there. Ossian, does it feel like a pastoral show?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very literal show. There's lots of trees in it. But you sort of start in this area which is meant to feel like the thicket. You know, there's lots of entwined branches and kind of heavy iconography about lots of trees. So busy paintings by Peter Doig or photographs by Thomas Struth. But then I think it sort of opens up a little bit as you get through to the second and later stages of the show. It does feel, when you're walking around, a little bit like, okay, another tree. You know, you need to work your way through it.
Yeah.
Because some of them are very subtle, actually. Some of them are very difficult sort of twists on what we might think of as being a natural tree form. So, for example, Zoe Leonard photographed trees that have grown despite being on a New York street and being stopped by a chain link fence or some barbed wire, which they've then grown around or grown into or sort of subsumed. So you get the idea of nature.
The sort of
competing.
Survival instinct of nature as well.
And they're very beautiful as well as being kind of quite harsh, mutated images. So there's lots of that to get stuck into once you get beyond the obvious, oh, it's another tree.
Yeah. And well, let's talk about that, because you come in into quite a hushed environment. And you can hear one of the artworks, a video installation on the very far wall, is from a Finnish artist. You can hear the swishing of branches and all the rest of it. And it's kind of dark. It is kind of like walking into a forest. As Ossian said, there are a lot of trees in that first room. That's what it's about.
I mean, there's a lot of trees in all of the rooms. Every single artwork has a tree in it.
Where are we going, though, curatorially, at the beginning? Are we treading softly into a sort of artistic forest? Is that the idea, do you think?
Well, I think it's a really interesting take on some of the ideas of narrative, let's say. Like, if we look at, say, the narrative of the novel, it's very much based on this kind of fairy tales. You're wandering through a forest and you discover something. So if you look at, let's say, the curation of the show somehow linked to those ideas of nature, human interaction, climate change, politics, all kind of wandering through in often quite literal representation of trees. I mean, for me, the show really works the best either in video or in sculpture. Sculpture feels, makes sense. I had a bit of problem with some of the paintings. Mm-hmm. Paintings felt quite a bit maybe too small mm-hmm. in something so enormous a subject as trees. But when you've got someone like Giuseppe Pinone, King Tree even, you could call him, or like there's such a variety, like Ugo Rodinone, or like Anya Galassio, a lot of the sculptural work really kind of gives you a tree-ishness, which dwarfs your own feeling of humanness, which I think is really successful. I think that's when the exhibition works the best.
Yeah, and I think Pinone is an obvious one because he carves trees back out of big lumps of wood, or he says that there's always a tree within a piece of furniture or a table or a chair always contains the body of another tree. And then he carves them out. So you see this little sapling being carved out, this huge chunk of kind of industrialized wood, which is great. But that's also quite an obvious, everyone knows that Pinone works. But I think that middle bit where it shifts, so it switches upside down and, as you mentioned, side to side. You have this tree on its side because she wanted to represent the tree in its actual scale, which is huge, so it had to be sideways along one wall with lots of different video screens kind of packed together, and it's an interesting way to present it. But it kind of came from this idea, Robert Smithson, which also relates to the 1960s kind of countercultural political idea of pollutants and pesticides being used and people going organic and understanding nature in a different way. So he took trees and literally turned them upside down or replanted them so the roots were showing, to kind of show that there was an equality but also an imbalance. And then Rodney Graham also flips the tree upside down. So that's where I think the show starts to get interesting, you know, when you get these kind of different manoeuvres.
Because as you rightly say in the introduction, like trees are, and obviously landscapes in a wider sense, are a real subject within the history of art. We're really thinking of, let's say, German romanticism and the ideas of the sublime, and there's Caspar David Friedrich, we're standing on the edge of the Alps kind of vibe. But this is much...
This is so different from that.
Yeah, there really is. And actually, even like, it's at its best when it's quite dark and dystopian, I think, actually. Mm. One of my favourite works is the Roxy Payne, which is actually a...
Desolation Row, the kind of... Yeah.
Burnt out trees.
Burnt out landscape with glowing red embers in it, basically of a dead forest.
Yeah.
That's, and it's very of this particular moment.
I know, I said this was like 1917, the film, which we did a show on recently.
Yeah,
it is. Holly, the producer, said, that's like 2020.
Yeah, it's like Australia yesterday.
Kind of sadly it is.
Well, and Ralph says in the introduction to the catalogue, he says that if we keep going the way we are in 600 years, there won't be any trees at this level, you know, of destruction. So, yeah, it's pertinent, and I get all that. And I think it's nice to bring it back to the 60s when that sort of environmentalism sort of started or took root.
Oh, God. Oh, sorry. Boom.
Okay, it's all right. We're just going to
retract that statement.
Just going to breathe now. It's fine. Other tree puns are available.
Totally.
We'll leave that alone.
Oh, man. Okay. Francesca.
Yeah, well, actually, I also think one of the interesting aspects is when we start looking as trees, it's, let's say, a way to look at other aspects about what art is. So let's talk about time, or let's talk about materiality. And I think the tree as a concept lends itself very well to particular things like that. I mean, I liked a lot of the ones where, I mean, the Jennifer Steinkamp animation, which looks like it's digital leaves basically falling in a big giant installation of trees.
Oh, I love that. Mm. That's the big video.
Yeah,
the big
birch trees. All
I love
kind
that.
Of
and it seemed that they had, because there wasn't any soundtrack to that, because unlike the Finnish artist downstairs, you couldn't hear the swaying of the branches and the leaves in the breeze. That was strange. It felt like they had a sort of mind of their own. They kind of felt like they were very much independent of the movement of the breeze and all the rest
and
of
did
it.
You see
they
the
were sentient
did
almost.
You see the little knots in the tree that were actual blinking eyes?
Like eyes. Yeah,
and that was kind of creepy, as you say, dystopian.
It was kind of,
But the video was where it came alive, the sculpture where it came alive. I thought that was one of the best works. I also like the big Mikado tree by Pascal Martin Tailloux.
I thought that was amazing.
You know, a sort of dead tree, a concrete tree covered in plastic bags, which is, on the one hand, a very obvious statement about, recycling and the lack of and the state that we've put nature in, but it was a beautiful object. It's actually a beautiful tree, a sort of a fake tree. And I thought that was an interesting way of flipping it, not just having to rely on the sublime or the knotty or the ancient.
There was a Ugo Rondinone's Wind Moon, which was one of the kind of objects that had pride of place under the kind of pyramid roof lights in the Hayward on the top floor there. And that was, you look at that and you think that is a tree painted white, a gnarly old willow or elm or something.
Giant olive tree.
And it's an olive tree, yeah. Mm. And and that's bronze, isn't it? That's cast in bronze. I like the fact that the thing that is reserved for busts of war leaders and the great and the good was kind of, he cast a tree in that.
And
that
I think he
kind of august material.
Wanted you to think back to those busts of Caesar who would have been alive when that tree was still growing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think, just in front of that, there's an amazing log, which has actually been cut up into 800 different leaves in this kind of paper-thin veneer by this Japanese artist and then restacked. So it's like a book. You know, you can almost look
it's incredible.
You can leaf through it. But it's sort of a feat of engineering, maybe more than a kind of, you know, a work of art in some ways. It's like an object of desire, but it's an interesting idea.
But I will say that some of the other works, if I'm allowed to say this, aren't necessarily successful within the context of the show. Maybe they're overshadowed. There's something about the paintings to me that just felt so flatly representative somehow. Not all the paintings, but maybe generally painting as a medium didn't quite fit for me somehow.
Yeah, and I think also the photography. I know you're supposed to be kind of immersed into...
Well, the photography worked well. I don't know. I thought the photography worked well.
I think you're supposed to be immersed into the forest when you get in there. So I think that's the sense of the first couple of rooms or the first experience. But I think when it opens out, it feels less kind of like it's trying to beat you over the head with the theme, which, you know, is difficult to
ignore. It's a really hard thing. As a girl who's just done a show about mushrooms, the idea
of
taking a single thing and repeatedly doing something with it and making it not feel like, and here's a tree, is not an easy
concept. Well, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll come back to that at the end, actually, that kind of single theme thing. Mm. What I wanted to ask you both was whether this is kind of a show about man versus nature, because Ralph Rogoff's wall texts, they obviously have a sort of political bent to them, or they tell you what the works are about, what the artists feel those works are about, the intention of those works. But he's not bashing us over the head with politics.
No.
I'm surprised that there weren't statistics, in fact, in this. It allowed the works to speak for themselves, right?
I think it's more poetic than that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was immensely popular.
I'm glad that it didn't.
No, I agree. I mean, obviously, like, when you're doing an exhibition like this, it has to have a purpose. Why now? Why tree now? but actually looking at, like, the huge amount of people who were there, I think it reflects a wider desire, in particularly a very urban, very brutalist context of being in London, a corona-obsessed city, and going inside and feeling this kind of immersion in nature. And I think there's something quite vital about that it's playing into, that's appealing beyond
the Instagrammable nature of a lot of contemporary art shows.
Yeah, and beyond the politics, actually, as well.
Quickly.
Yes, exactly.
No,
like you had that one lined up.
No, that's just, you know,
I like an Instagrammable picture.
I went on the press day, so they weren't all taking selfies, but I imagine, you know, that's a thing still. But yeah, there were subtler moments as well. I mean, I think some of it didn't work. Like, there's one wall that's ostensibly just looks like it's been panelled to look like it's part of the show, but it's a work by Virginia Overton, who obviously did it to make it look decorative, to talk about the decorative nature of wood, but it kind of just fell flat a little bit. And I think there are subtleties that people will miss as they go sort of on this slightly dreamy tour, you know, looking around the trees and feeling refreshed, which is fine.
I mean, I kind of felt like we should all be like the log lady in Twin Peaks, maybe be given a log to carry around with us, connect to wood somehow.
Stroking it against our cheeks,
I would have felt like
brackets as we walked around.
Well, the ones downstairs, which are by this artist Hugh Hayden, who we're going to talk about, one of those logs is actually covered in grouse feathers or pheasant feathers or peacock feathers, and it took him months to do it. So if you picked it up, you'd be in a lot of trouble with that one. So don't pick up that
one. Try not to touch the sculptures.
Yes.
Log
lady.
Maybe log I don't know which way round you guys did the show, walked the show. I left that sort of bottom right room. I always leave that one to the last at the Hayward. Don't know why.
Yeah, I always do the same too. I always go up
and
down.
That was the one with the preponderance of the painting and photography in it, I guess.
I mean, I loved the George Shaw that was kind of like a crappy bit of a street.
Well, he paints with humbral kind of model-making paints.
Yeah.
Painting paints. And I thought that was the point of it. And I like
that. Yeah, and also there was like the Robert Adams, like Shadows of a Tree in Colorado on like an old garage. And actually, I like the Ito Barada, Strange waste lots of like a palm tree in a like kind of barren, brutalized city. I mean, there are a lot of great moments. Yeah, there are some really good works there.
And that one right at the end, if you were coming to it at the end, was the Anya Galaccio tree, which is a bronze tree with the hanging apples. I mean, she originally made that with the real tree and with the real apples, which just rotted onto the floor. And I felt like I was missing that visceral thing, you know, the smell of the wood when you come in or being hit by something. I guess maybe that was what some of those works, the decorative ones, maybe you were supposed to smell. I didn't get that kind of really visceral.
And maybe that's why we like the Finnish artist who, you're going to pronounce her name for me again, even though I put her in a book once.
Elisa Attila.
Yes, Attila. Attila's work. The reason why I think we liked that, because it had some of the sound of the forest. And I think actually we want that. There's a desire more for like ever more fourth-dimensional immersion into space.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. We did promise our listeners that we would be walking through a sort of mossy wood and twigs would be snapping under our feet. That was a hollow promise. But it's an interesting thing. There was something, maybe something lacking in the sensory side of it, in the sense that trees creak. The breeze, obviously we mistake the breeze for the sound of trees, but they're kind of, as I say, they seem sentient because of the kind of way they sway.
Well, they actually
sentient. And what they mean.
There's loads of books out there talking about how trees can think. They like their children. There's a great book about trees that I was reading recently, which is talking about how trees like to have their children around us. When human-grown trees are planted in forests, they're actually deaf and dumb. They can't communicate in the same way. So actually, forests kind of have a sentient
and
possibility.
And there's the wood wide web, yes. But I think these are trees as reshaped by artists. If we wanted like pretty pictures of trees, we could go somewhere else. And I think maybe that's why the paintings fall a little bit flat, because you're maybe looking at something that's a representation of something that can't, you know, you need to experience it. You want to feel like you're going for a walk in the woods rather than being sort of shown a beautiful book or an illustration of trees.
But maybe that also says something about a shift in contemporary art in a wider sense, that we're actually drawing away from representation somehow. Like, representation has a dated nature to it, and we want something else beyond representation.
Yeah,
I think that might be part of what's
I was surprised not to see something like a big Ed Butinsky or something with, you know, a slice of the Amazon rainforest missing or one of these kinds of things.
I mean, it's a good
maybe
Jeff
refreshing
Wall, homeless people in
they were kind of itinerant fruit pickers, weren't they, in Israel, who were sleeping next to a prison.
Well, you also,
and that was a kind of amazing thing, but it kind of sheltered under the trees. I'm not quite sure how tree-ish that one was.
You also mentioned the Steve McQueen, and he just pictured the lynching tree, which he'd filmed near for 12 Years a Slave, and that was an incredibly powerful thing, because it was a weird light box. The picture
itself, it looked very cheerful and very innocent. And of course, the tree
kind of blurry.
Is. It's just what people did to it.
It's what we've done to the trees.
Well, it kind of was. I thought that was kind of strong. I quite like the way that was presented.
But then that's also what we've done to each other, regardless of trees. The tree's still there.
Yeah.
What have we done in between? You know, and maybe trees, maybe we won't destroy all the trees. Maybe the trees will outlast us. Maybe that's a better way of looking at the kind of...
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
We mentioned your mushrooms show, which is on at Somerset House.
Only across the bridge.
Just across the bridge. We wanted to ask you this idea of what it's like to kind of do a kind of single, you know, a very focused show.
It's a
on
really
something like that. They're obviously, I think the Wood Wide Web is talking, the Hayward Gallery is talking to Somerset House.
Yeah, we're across the bridge.
Stretching under the Thames.
I mean, it is quite
with its
timely.
Tendrils. Well, that's quite a challenge with that one. I mean, we obviously did a show on this. We've talked to you about it. But it's tough when you're dealing with one thing that has been represented so much in art, how to narrow your focus.
And mine was a much smaller. Yeah. I mean, it's just a three-room little baby show compared to this grand, much larger, let's say, tree-sized film exhibition.
I thought I'd ban this.
It's quite hard doing a show devoted to a single object.
Yeah.
And making it show a breadth of medium and a breadth of approach, and also why artists are drawn towards it, because that's the main thing. Because as curators, we're just following essentially what artists are being attracted to. So why in particular the tree and why now? And I think it does a good job of trying to address that. And it's focused, again, in the same kind of period, maybe a little bit longer. Mine's a bit more recent, but the past 50 years. Mm. And I think both shows are reflecting, again, this wider shift as a ride of the movement towards rethinking our relationship to nature.
And on that note, does it feel we walk into sort of a forestish darkened room, big old room, lots of trees in there. Does it feel like a bleak show?
No, but I did want something more
from it.
I mean, I felt like actually, if, in a weird way, I wanted it more to be full fairy tale.
Okay.
I wanted it to be full Alice in Wonderland. Maybe, but you're dealing with a lot of space and you want the works to breathe and, you know, it's a hard thing to do with anything like that. But I want to walk, I want to be in The Hobbit. I want to be walking through that forest.
The Ents.
Yeah, I agree. There's a kind of, we expect these interactive environments nowadays, don't we? We come to think that all shows should be somehow like that. But I agree, maybe using the sculpture court at, or the, you know, on the roof, or maybe having something when you come in that gave you that sense. There was a sort of forest up against the, made of cardboard and actual branches, which kind of gave you that idea of that magical portal. But there was nothing that sort of, you know, there was no cabin in the woods. There was no feeling of isolation or a feeling of, you know, following that path. But I think it wasn't too heavy either, which could have been worse.
Yeah.
You know, I think Ralph's point was lightly made and there's enough balance between all those things. And he's been developing this for years. You can imagine him thinking, oh, must, you know, that's a great idea. I must take that. Must, it feels like it's been developed over a long period of time.
And it's really about trees, not wood. Because wood itself could be a totally different exhibition.
Oh God,
as well.
Yeah. I wonder. Yeah, and I feel like it's a show. If you have the opportunity to go and see more than once, I'm sure all the shows we talk about always are improved from kind of multiple viewings. But this one really does. Some of the things we've talked about have suddenly come alive again in my head since we've put them into context and things like that. Okay, so that is Among the Trees at the Hayward. Ossian, for your kind of further reading, for some of the things within your critical faculty that it reminded you of, you wanted to take us to your gallery, listen, to talk about a new artist, Hugh Hayden.
Yeah.
Who's Hugh Hayden?
So Hugh's in the show, Among the Trees, but that's an earlier work, and I think that one's about the idea that this log has been sort of camouflaged and made out of feathers, whereas actually it's a piece of wood. So there's a relation back to hunting and nature, and in our show there'll also be more sort of big, large, tree-like forms. So he's taken a picnic table, the kind of crummy ones that you get in the service station car park, you know, a classic picnic table, but they're then having the rest of the tree growing out of them. So they feel like a man-made object at the centre, which has then been allowed to sprout. So, you know, there's a sense of a communal space that's been denied, or, you know, a sort of a sharing, caring picnic table that you can't actually access. Nature's taken it back over. Some of the picnic tables have more kind of claw-like sort of spikes coming out of them, and some of them just have the original branches. So let's say one tree that had fallen over had then been used to make the entire picnic table. So he's really interested in that kind of idea of forestry. So these were made in Kent out of chestnut and hornbeam, which are kind of invasive species, or we've come to think of them as British, but they weren't originally British trees. So there's also a sort of political side to it. He made a table and chairs called America, which also had these spikes coming out of it, which was another way of saying that, you know, home is where the heart is, but actually a lot of people are excluded from that. So there's a kind of deeper political message going on. He's a young black guy from Texas, and he's also made these amazing skillets, which are frying pans, and they have a kind of African mask embedded into the base of the frying pan. So again, you have this, he has this love of, the show's called American Food, so this love of the Southern cuisine and of the
this
idea.
This barbecue central kind of thing.
Totally, yeah. And like, you know, he uses these heavy skillets to make his special cornbread recipe, so we'll have a whole box, you know, whole wall full of these cornbread boxes that he... So he makes a lot of performances, and he calls them culinary installations, where he's set up a dinner sort of experience where he tried to fit as many people as he could in his studio to see how many people he could feed. And the only way to do it was to make one giant table with little holes in it that everyone could just pop up and eat from or whatever. You know, he's made lots of different situations in which sharing food is a big part of his practice. So these skillets talk about that. They talk about the history of kind of African-American food and soul food and all of that. So that's what he's dealing with. And it's an interesting... Oh, I don't want to use the puns. It's an interesting mixture, melting pot, whatever you want to call it.
It sounds like a fantastic show. So that's on Listen right now. Okay. Yeah.
And I thought I'd mention this other show at the Serpentine.
Yeah, Francesca kind of... We've finished off talking about Among the Trees. Yeah. Francesca's talking about wood.
Yeah.
The difference between a show about wood.
Yeah, well, that, it was weird because then I walked into the Serpentine and they're showing this design duo, Forma Fantasma, who are Italian guys, but they're based in Holland and they design amazing furniture and amazing exhibitions. And they've made a whole exhibition about wood, like all about wood. So it's, from a design point of view, it's about the usage of wood and how they, as designers, are... let's say, culpable for the misuse of wood. So they've got this amazing array. It's like a library of wood, which has been collected since the 1851 Great Exhibition of all those really rare hardwoods and things that are now probably half of them are extinct or endangered. And then looking at, and this is where the visceral thing comes in. You walk in and there's a giant
oak,
there's a giant oak tree that's been cut into those planes and you really smell it. So you get the sense that you're dealing with that. But then there's a lot of kind of informative... the statistics, as you said, which I couldn't quite get into. So it's more from a design point of view, you know, where the culpability for using this material has come from and how the design community is maybe not taking responsibility for that. So they're kind of addressing that. And they make furniture out of wood, but it's also kind of reclaimed wood or wood that has been sustainably farmed or whatever. So, you know, I think there's much more subtlety in what Ralph Rugoff and the Haywood is doing. Mm-hmm. This is much more sort of like infotainment about where wood comes from.
Yeah,
and
this
what we
just
do
sounds a bit more like a kind of science, science museum.
Yeah.
Touch and
a little bit.
Touch it, and the light goes on, and it tells you something. That's also made that sound really bad. When I poor old Forma Fantasma. They also sound like a magician's assistant from the 1980s.
It's quite a good
the
name.
Great Suprendo. That's called Cambio at the Serpentine. Ossian also mentioned Hugh Hayden. Sounds like a great show at the Listen. Oh, now, Francesca.
Mm.
You're taking it, well, it's a magazine called Good Trouble was your first choice.
Yeah, so it's their third issue. It comes out every single year, though they exist
every
online.
A magazine that comes out every single year?
Yes.
What it's lazy magazine people.
It's not. It's done by, it's basically a newspaper format, and it's literally done by, pretty much by Rod Stanley, the former editor of Days Confused. Mm-hmm. And it's all about art and activism. But the current issue is devoted to climate change, and I thought that was a really interesting, let's say, contemporary extension of trees in terms of it's got a cover feature with Oliver Eliasson. There's a whole project inside of different artists doing work about climate in some way. There's some nice tree imagery, part of some of which was from the Fondation Cartier Trees exhibition that was last year. There's been quite a few tree shows floating around. But I think it's also really interesting looking at, let's say, how younger artists and emerging artists are really looking at climate as a subject. And it's really fun and it's really well written. There's a big poster by Scott King in there. I recommend buying Good Trouble.
So this is you get this at the Tate bookshop.
Yep.
Get this at the Serpentine bookshop.
Get it online.
Online. Good
online.
Trouble.
Good Trouble magazine.
I mean, they do one issue a year, but Francesca says they work really hard.
Yes.
So whatever.
It's worth it. It's good.
And at the Centre Pompidou in Paris, Jeremy Shaw.
Yeah, no, the reason why I brought this up is because the connection I could see with the Ralph Rugoff show was this kind of idea of wanting to be somewhere else. Wanting to immerse yourself in, let's say, a forest or inside this kind of cocoon-like space. And I think Jeremy Shaw's show, Phase Shifting Index, which is incredible at the Pompidou, does that in a very successful way. It's a 7-video installation. All the videos are basically taking place from the future, but they're kind of pastiche different periods of time. They're all picturing people dancing. They're kind of future robots trying to connect to a former humanity, us. And at some point, I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to ruin it, but all 7 videos sync up. There's music coming from the ground beneath you. And then some, they kind of break through this ecstatic moment. And all the dancers from the different kind of period styles do the same choreography. And then it breaks through to this kind of computer meltdown moment. And it is exceptional. It's exceptional. I was there at the opening. Every half hour, the audience clapped. They were applauding the artwork because it's so exceptionally done. It's taken 2 years to put together. He's represented by Johan Koenig. It's going to be going to the Swiss Institute in New York and then Mona in Tasmania later in the year. And it is, in terms of ideas of like the desire to place yourself beyond time, beyond your physicality, into this kind of other space, I think it's...
That's interesting. Every Friday night.
But the reason why I like the show as well is because it made you as a viewer maybe because of the rumble of the sound as well as this kind of stimulus of the music, it made you feel part of the actual thing you're watching. So you were getting the sensations of this kind of ecstatic nature that you're watching represented on the screens. And I mean, you could go through, I watched it for an hour and a half, and you could go through it, you can see it as an entirety, and then you can go to also the seven different films. I mean, it's exceptional.
Okay, well, some pretty good recommendations there. Thank you. That's a very rich, kind of rich pickings for the stuff that it reminded you of. Jeremy Shaw's Mutations Creations is on at the Pompidou Centre in Paris. Good Trouble is out now. Issue 3, Francesca says. So if you go down to the woods today, you'll be in for what? I don't know, a kind of pretty rewarding experience. Thank you, Ralph Rugoff. Among the Trees is on at the Hayward Gallery until the 17th of May. Thank you very much to both my guests today, Francesca Gavin and Ossian Ward, and of course to my producer, Holly Fisher. I'll be back next week to discuss The Mirror and the Light, all 900 pages of it, the final instalment of Hilary Mantel's Cromwell trilogy. But until then, from me, Robert Bound, thank you very much for tuning in.